Well, school's back in session, and no matter what grade your child is in, here she is back to school, kindergarten through college age. As we prepared them to go, some of us were concerned with making sure our children had shots and vaccines they needed. Now, I think most of you are thinking, well, this conversation doesn't apply to me. Maybe you don't have younger children. Maybe you don't have college-age kids. But the conversation we're about to have is targeted specifically to those with preteens and teenagers, a vaccine that both boys and girls ages 11 to 18 need to get, or there's a chance they could suffer deadly consequences. So I hope I have your attention. With that, I'll introduce Dr. Shelley Gilroy, infectious diseases expert and professor of medicine from SUNY Upstate. Good morning, Dr. Gilroy.
Good morning, Tricia.
So what are we talking about here?
Well, they're talking about a specific bacteria that causes meningitis. It's called meningococcus. It's the meningococcus. It's Neisseria meningitidis. And the reason why we're talking about it is because there have been some cases of meningitis where actually death had occurred, because even though people were treated for this infection, it the mortality and the complication rate is pretty high.
It is, and it's fast too, isn't it?
Yes, it's pretty rapid. People can be have just a mild headache and then go on to develop confusion and then be comatose, and they can develop a rash. And it's a very life-threatening bacterial infection.
It is. Kids get it from each other in large groups?
Well, it's possible to get it if someone has it and they come in contact with another person, with the person who had it, and it's spread through droplets. And it usually happens if a kid who has never been exposed to this bacteria, if they get it, then they can sometimes get a severe infection with it. Not everybody gets a severe infection from it, but if they do get it and they get a severe infection, then it can be deadly.
Okay, so one child could have it, and it might not be so bad. The symptoms might not be so bad. So they're in school.
Right.
They're in gym class.
Yes.
Or they're living in the dorm.
Right.
Whatever it would be. And they can pass it on to somebody else who is a lot more at risk for getting very sick from it.
Yeah, or they've never been exposed to that bacteria in the past.
So they don't have antibodies built
right.
up. I
exactly.
see. All right. Is this just one form of meningitis? Because there are several.
Yes. Right? There's many different forms of organisms that can cause meningitis. One of them is called, it's a bacteria called strep pneumonia. There's this one due to Neisseria meningitidis. There's others called Haemophilus influenza and Listeria. Those are just to name a few.
And they roll right off your tongue.
Right. And there's a few viruses, several different viruses that can cause meningitis as well.
All right. But there's this vaccine. Speak to me about the vaccine.
Yes. There's a vaccine that covers meningococcus, certain types, A, C, and Y, and there's another one called W135. The reason why they're recommending this vaccine is because there were a couple of cases of meningitis in college-age students due to the type C, and there were complications from it as well as deaths.
There were.
Yes.
So the idea here would be to get your child vaccinated, in their early teen years?
Yes.
And that holds them for the rest of their
right.
life?
Right. The new vaccine that's available, which has actually been around for a few years, actually provides protection for a longer term.
It does. Okay.
Yes.
All right. What are the symptoms? So if I'm hanging out with my friends and we're in gym class and somebody has, what symptoms do I need to, as a child, need to be nervous about this?
Well, they can get a sore throat, a headache, just flu-like symptoms.
It does sound like
and
the flu.
Then, but it rapidly progresses. Mm-hmm. And they can also get a rash sometimes, a diffuse rash. It's these little spots they can get on their arms and legs. But most of the time, it's a rapid illness. They get a high fever, and it'll progress within 24 to 48 hours.
Wow. So if I'm a parent and my child starts to have those, I think it's the flu. I go to the family doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds to me like if you don't get to the doctor right away, then there's a chance you're going to lose
right,
your child.
Right, because antibiotics is the way that you can help stop the bacteria from multiplying, and if you can give the antibiotics as quickly as possible, that increases your chances of improving and surviving.
It does.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, but if I get my child a vaccine, then basically I'm protecting my child from ever getting this.
Well, you are, but you're protecting them against those strains that I told you about. There is one strain. It's a type B strain that is not included in the vaccine.
Okay.
And that one, unfortunately, we don't have a vaccine for yet.
We don't. Are schools requiring the vaccine?
Yes. As far as I know, most camps, most schools are requiring it. Anywhere where the kids have to stay over for more than a one week mm-hmm. time period, they are recommending it because if there's anywhere where there's close contact, crowded living conditions, that's usually where there's a high risk of passing on this bacteria and then some children becoming infected.
Okay, all right. Is it expensive? Does insurance cover it?
I think most insurance companies do cover it.
They do. They don't want these kids getting sick either.
No, absolutely.
That's very interesting. Is there anything else we should know about this meningococcal vaccine?
Just that it's a good idea because even by giving it to the younger population, there was a study out in the UK where they found that by doing that, it also helped protect other people out in the community through herd immunity.
Oh, okay.
So it is a good idea.
Explain what herd immunity is.
Pretty much if someone gets vaccinated, then there's antibodies that form in other people out in the community.
Really?
Even though they may not have had the vaccine.
That's an interesting choice of terms, herd immunity.
Yes.
But it certainly applies. Very good. Well, Dr. Shelley Gilroy, this has been interesting learning about this vaccine. I know quite often there are questions about whether parents want to give their kids vaccines these days, and some of those questions just even shouldn't be asked because this is truly something that can save lives. So I thank you so much for coming by this morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
And listeners, you may have heard the FDA reiterate this week their warning, telling parents not to give their children over-the-counter cold medicines. Dr. Thomas Welsh, chair of SUNY Upstate's pediatrics department, explained last year why this warning is so important. So let's take a listen.
First of all, it doesn't make any sense to use medicines like this because we're treating a symptom that may actually be beneficial. Cough, for example, certainly is a nuisance for a child, but a cough actually has a function. It's to help clear secretions from the lung. So do you necessarily want to stop something that may be a very important bodily function? The second thing is the medications really don't work. There have not been any studies that have shown that the use of any of these over-the-counter cough and cold preparations really make any difference in terms of the way a child feels, how long it takes a child to recover from the illness. And the third thing is that they're dangerous. As has been pointed out by the safety review by the FDA, children actually die from the use of these medications. Mm. Dextromethorphan, which is the ingredient that's used as a cough suppressant most of the time, can make children really depress their respirations. There certainly have been reports of children that have been overdosed with dextromethorphan and have died because of it.
Thanks, Dr. Welsh. And parents, I hope you'll take heed.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Creating our own obstacles, or pointing our heads to the goal. As fall rolls around, I've been looking back at this year's goals. For those I haven't reached, I'm asking, what am I doing that's getting in the way of getting there? Or not doing, for that matter. Over and over again, I found I create my own obstacles, and the same kind, no matter what the goal. One example, kind of surprising for a guy who thinks he's an optimist, is sometimes I'm defeated before I ever get rolling, stopping myself with thoughts like, you'll never get there, so why bother? You'll never be able to do this anyway. Happily, I've often triumphed over this with a big stop to my self-doubt. Then getting busy doing and seeing what good things happened. Another hurdle that I kept putting in my own way, is once I finally got doing, I'd feel frustrated, of course, because I never move as quick as I'd like to. Then I'd waste more time and more energy pointing the finger and blaming things and people outside of me. For example, I'm a runner. I've had a nasty hamstring pull for 2 years. My goal for this year? Healing the hamstring. Running again with gusto. After dumping the self-defeat, you'll never get over this injury because you're too old to run, Methuselah. And actually starting the long, frustrating rehab, I'd vent my frustration with complaint. Physical therapy is stupid and running is bad for you. Give it up. or start a brouhaha with my therapist. Are you sure this is right? Do you think we could do it this way? Make myself and everybody else miserable and stop my rehab. Solution, remind myself, rehab really works. That's what the research shows. And ask my therapist for suggestions. Then redirect my bellyache and energy to the goal by doing the exercises. The payoff, last Sunday, I ran a 3-mile race, first in 2 years since hurting my hamstring, and did great for me. And no hamstring pain. Yahoo! And blazing across the finish line, I discovered something. Overcoming a long setback is really inspiring. And my commitment to my long-term goal, don't tell anyone, a marathon under 3 hours, is back with a boost. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.